Morning, everybody. Good to be here. Glad you're here, too. I was a pastor for a number of years, and whenever I gave over my pulpit to another preacher, I was always a little nervous. So if you see Tim gripping his chair today, you'll know what's going on. Like, oh, Remy, please don't go down that rabbit trail. I just have to say, Jamie, that song wrecked me. That just the title to your song, "Oh Come All Ye Unfaithful," it just really struck me, and I just got kind of weepy, actually, because that's the gospel, isn't it? The gospel isn't, "Oh, come all ye faithful." I mean, although the faithful are certainly welcome. The gospel, this good news, is that the unfaithful get to come to Jesus as well. That's what Advent is all about. So I'm still kind of a little broken up about it, so that's kind of crazy. For this message, there's some notes. Tim and Jamie have started to print some notes, so if you want to track with me, you're welcome to do that. So over the last few weeks, Tim has been having us consider these three words: good, beautiful, and kind. And those are great words. They've been kind of ministering to me, kind of washing over me, cleansing me, I think, of my mind, because there's a lot of things in the world that are not good and beautiful and kind. And during Advent, I think that's part of our yearning, isn't it? We long for his coming to come and bring something that is good and beautiful and kind. It's so easy to only see what is ugly and bad and unkind. And I'm guilty of that. You know, to be honest, the condition of the world has gotten to me a little bit. I've been feeling cynical, a bit jaded. Maybe I read too many news feeds and see the bad news. But there's so much happening right now that has gotten me discouraged. Of course, there's the war in Israel. And there's all the political rhetoric that we keep hearing, and it's going to get worse. And there's the anti-Semitism that has risen that's just kind of shocked me. And because I wrote a book on spiritual abuse a couple years back, I regularly hear back from people who either have read my book or watch my YouTube channels. And just this week, someone wrote me about his experience. And he related a number of bad church experiences to me, and then he finished by saying this. He said, "When I hear someone say, 'I'm a pastor, I can't run away quick enough. Going to a church service makes me nauseated. I will admit that I haven't been the perfect congregant, but at the same time, my voice has been silenced or dismissed year after year when raising serious concerns about abusive treatment within the church. I walked away from several churches in total frustration, and I'm not sure that I have the strength to try again.'" So church for this man was anything but good and beautiful and kind. And that's just so sad to me, just one out of a pile of things. This series has been based on a poem that Tim has read every week, and I'm going to read it as well, by Langston Hughes. This kind of sets the stage. And Langston said, "I'm so tired of waiting, aren't you, for the world to be good and beautiful and kind? Let us take a knife and cut the world in two and see what worms are eating at the rind." You know, there's so many worms that are eating at the rind, and Tim has mentioned a few so far. He's mentioned three. He talked about the worm of sin and prayerlessness and last week's stress and anxiety. And today, I want to look at the worm of trauma. And your first response to that is like, "Oh, trauma, I can't relate to that. I've never had any trauma in my life." But don't be too quick to judge that. Don't check out on me. If not for you, maybe for someone else. But my guess is that you have experienced some trauma in your life. You may not know it, or you may have just minimized it. But because many of us aren't aware of our trauma, and we've overlooked it, I'm going to spend a little extra time, about half my time today, just talking about trauma to make sure that we are aware of it, so we aren't letting any of it go undone or unaddressed. You see, we tend to associate trauma with dramatic events that impact other people, not us. You know, it might be a catastrophe or extreme poverty. It might be some form of abuse. There's all kinds of traumas that we experience, but we typically don't think what happened to us qualifies as trauma. Trauma happens to other people, not to us. But trauma is really in the eye of the beholder, if you think about it. What feels traumatic to me might not feel traumatic to you at all. and vice versa. An embarrassing grade school rejection might have devastated you, but for another person, it's just a distant memory that they laugh about, tell a story about now. Or maybe an abusive coach caused you to doubt yourself and to quit sports forever. And maybe that same coach, in the same manner, challenged another person to be the best athlete they could ever be. Trauma isn't necessarily a single event. It might develop over a time of repeated action. And your wound might not be caused by something negative that was done to you, but something good that wasn't done to you. For example, let's say your parents didn't show you love and never told you that they loved you. That can be traumatic, right? It's not something that they did to you, it's something that they didn't do to you, but it can still cause a wound that stays with you throughout your life. See, in a world filled with sin, I'm pretty convinced that we each carry some level of woundedness, of trauma from our past that keeps us from being the person that God wants us to be today. And these wounds keep us from being good and beautiful and kind. And so it's important that we take time to slow down and consider the impact that trauma may have had on us, or maybe people we know. The pain and memory of our wounds often cause us to not want to think about them. We don't want to go there. We don't want to talk about them. When it comes up, we change the subject. We either ignore the trauma or we minimize it, because we're afraid that other people, you know, if we talk about that stuff, that people are going to think we're hypersensitive or we're unstable in some way. And so our trauma becomes this unattended wound that never gets addressed. It gets buried deep inside of us, only to manifest in a variety of negative ways. One of the results of trauma is the feeling of shame. And shame is interesting. You know, we typically think of shame as something that we feel when we've done something, maybe some kind of immoral behavior. And so we're ashamed of that. And that's part of shame, but probably more often is the case is when something is done to us. It might be a form of abuse or some big betrayal or maybe a traumatic event of some kind. And so as a result of what we've done or what's been done to us more likely, shame makes us feel inadequate, even defective. And some of us are haunted by that shame every day. We live with it. No one knows it, but we know it. Others of us live with shame only for a few moments after maybe we have some kind of a weakness exposed in our life. But everyone deals with shame at some level. It's just a part of the human condition. That's why Paul talked about it in the book of Romans when he said that we have all fallen short of the glory of God. You know, none of us rise up to that level of perfection that God has. And we look at that gap and we feel shame. We feel like there's something wrong with us. There's something lacking. And we feel it. And so shame fills us with fear. It's the fear of being exposed in our weakness, and then the fear of being judged for our weakness, and then being rejected for our weakness. So we'll do anything to prevent being exposed and rejected. I really like the way one author talks about shame and how we respond to it, because I think it's a great little grid of three ways that many people respond to their shame and try to cover it up. And so listen to see, you know, you can judge yourself here how you fall in this grid. But first, people cover their shame by moving away. And what that means is we tend to want to hide away. We want to isolate ourselves so people don't see who we really are. We withdraw so people can't see our weaknesses or our failures. And we might become secretive or maybe even lie to hide who we really are from other people. Moving away might mean that we escape into an addiction or busyness or business or exercise or even religion. Second way that people cover their shame is by moving toward. And what I mean by that, by moving toward people, is we try to please other people by moving toward them. We want to please them. We want to take care of them. We want to do all we can for other people to make them happy so they like us and they overlook our weaknesses. You become the consummate people pleaser or caretaker. You know, someone who can't say no to anyone for fear of upsetting them and they rejecting you. And people who move toward others can be a soft touch. They lack boundaries, letting people take advantage of them. And they do that because they hope that people will like them and they will accept them and give them the acceptance that they crave. Third way we cover shame is by moving against other people. So that's more than moving toward, it's moving against, meaning that you show anger towards other people. You hope your anger will keep people from getting too close to you and getting to see the weaknesses that you are so aware of. And you purposely make people walk on eggshells so they won't get close to you and they won't confront you. But if they do confront you, then you push back. You are quick to defend yourself. You go on the offensive. You push back on people, and you'd rather people hate you for being a jerk than for seeing your weakness and rejecting you. So, any of those sound familiar? Not that you want to confess to them, but I think we all do that. I know I do. I mean, I could tell you how I fall into that grid, but I won't. See, these are the behaviors that keep us from being good and beautiful and kind. We're so caught up in protecting our wounds, making sure that people don't see us and reject us, that there's no room in us to find to be good and beautiful and kind. And many of us do all these three, depending on the circumstances that present themselves to it. It's kind of like a carpenter. A carpenter puts on a tool belt every day so they don't have to go back to their truck and they have screwdrivers and hammers, and they've got a power tool hanging off their belt, and they've got a tape measure, and I mean, all kinds of things in there, right? And that's how many of us are as well with our shame. But we get up in the morning and we put on our emotional tool belt with our abilities to move away and move toward and move against, because we don't know what we're going to experience that day, and we want everything available to us, right? If you look at your life, if you look at the world, I think shame is at the root of a lot of the problems that we see, the ugliness and the badness. There's a wound that needs healing that's preventing us from the goodness that God would like to move through us. But instead of going back to uncover our wounds and be healed, we just keep reacting out of our shame and our pain. So what do we do? That was the bad news. What's the good news? How do we overcome this? So let me give you a few ideas. First thing that you can do is be aware of your body, which might seem strange, but I think God will use your body to reveal to you, uncover the wounds that you have from your past. In the book, The Body Tells the Score, maybe some of you have read that, but it talks about how trauma is registered in our body so that we should listen to what our body is telling us. Trauma can show itself in physical ways as well as emotional ways. In physical ways, it shows us by maybe a quickening pulse, maybe shallow breathing, maybe difficulty thinking clearly when we get triggered by something from our past, something that reminds us of our wound. Or trauma can reveal itself in hyper emotions like extreme anger or sadness or fear. And these responses, whether physical or emotional, they might be God's way of alerting us to a wound from our past that he wants us to address. It's like a flashing light on our dashboard telling us that something's wrong and you need to deal with this. The sooner, the better. So don't ignore it. You know, pay attention to the flashing light. Second thing you can do is to revisit your trauma. And probably, if you're going to revisit your trauma, you should do this with a counselor, because it can get tricky. But it's important to go back in your life to see what the source of that pain is, right? What's the wound? What happened back there? Is there a wound in your past that you've minimized or covered over? And ask God, what is that? What was that? Where did things go wrong for me? You know, years ago, Lisa came to me and asked me a question. I can remember exactly where it was, the time of day, and everything. She came in, asked me a simple question, and I responded very defensively. And I felt judged by her, and I got mad. And typically in that situation, I'm sure I did it many times, Lisa would just kind of like, whoa, okay, not now. And she'd walk away, but that time, for whatever, she had the courage, and she stepped up and she said, Rem, why are you so defensive? What did I say? Because it was a simple question. What did I say that made you so mad? And those are really great questions, and it was kind of like God was just speaking to me at that moment. And so I remember pausing and saying, okay, I'm going to think about this. I got calm, and I said, I guess the reason your question made me mad was because I didn't hear you asking me that question. I heard my dad asking me that question. My dad would often ask questions in a very judgmental way, like he kind of knew the answer. I wasn't living up to what he wanted. So I was living out of a wound that I didn't even know I had until Lisa dared to ask the question. And like I said, I think God was there in that moment using Lisa to uncover something that had been there all along. Third thing you can do is name your shame and the lies that you believe as a result of the wound. You know, trauma will often cause you to start believing lies about yourself. And there's hundreds of lies. Lies like, it's my fault, or there's something wrong with me, or I'll never amount to something. It's unending. But trauma will cause you to create a story about yourself that changes the trajectory of your life. And you want to go back and make sure that that doesn't happen. So it's important to ask God to identify those events, you know, the shame that was introduced in that wound, and the lies that you came to believe, and then seek God for the truth. For example, one lie I believed was that I was unacceptable. And I remember a time that I was playing Little League baseball, and I loved that at the time, and my dad was going to come to that game, and which was unusual because he worked shifts, so he wasn't always available. And so he was there. I was excited to have him there, excited to show off my skills. Well, it came down to the ninth inning, you know, classic setup. Ninth inning, we were behind 3-2, two outs. I come to the plate. I'm going to be the hero or the dog of this story. And I hit a grounder, which immediately deflated me because I was afraid I was going to get thrown out. But I hit a grounder to the shortstop, and it was a classic foolishness of Little League baseball, but it went through the guy's legs, and it went out into the left field, halfway between the left fielder and the shortstop. And so they go out there, and they can't get a handle on the ball. Meanwhile, there's a runner on base. The runner and I clear the bases, and we go ahead 4-3, and we win the game. And I'm like, this couldn't have been any better than what just happened. I came off the field, and there was a pretty big crowd, and I looked for my dad. And I saw him, and he wasn't happy. I mean, I thought he'd be there, like, pumping his fist and so happy that he came the night that his son hit a home run to win the game. But he wasn't happy, and it really confused me. And when I went over to him, he grudgingly congratulated me but said that the only reason we won the game was because the other team screwed up. It still affects me. You know, that was a wound that took place. He didn't give me any credit, and it really hurt. That was a wound that told me that I wasn't acceptable, not just to him, but I, Remy, was not acceptable. I didn't measure up. And I think that happens to a lot of people in a lot of different ways. You know, too many of us live our lives out of our past wounds. But Jesus came to change that, right? He came to change our story. And so finally, once you've named your shame, you need to gain a new perspective. You need to view yourself as God sees you. There's a verse in the book of Hebrews that has changed my life, and it's really helped me to see myself from God's perspective. In Hebrews 10:14, it says this. It says, by one sacrifice, God has made perfect forever those who are being made holy. Now, if you struggle with shame, I just really encourage you to take this verse and just meditate on it until it breaks over your heart, because I think it's pretty powerful. Really, almost every word in it has so much meaning. But when Jesus died on the cross, his sacrifice made you and me perfect in God's sight. I mean, get a hold of that. Perfect. Do you believe that? Do you believe that you're perfect in God's sight? I mean, if I could scan your hearts, I bet there's many of us here who don't. We don't believe that. In fact, it might even feel blasphemous to say that. But actually, it's kind of blasphemous to not say that, because that's admitting that Jesus, his work on the cross, didn't do what he said it did. He made us perfect, right? You know, in spite of your wounds, in spite of your trauma, in spite of the things you regret, the things that in your life that were not good or beautiful or kind, you are still perfect in his eyes. That's how effective Jesus' sacrifice was on the cross. He cleansed you from everything that you've ever done. Anything that wasn't good or beautiful or kind. And so instead of living out of the lies of your past, the lies that tell you that you don't measure up, that you're not good enough, you can start to live out of the truth that you are perfect in God's eyes. But more than that, Hebrews tells us in this one little verse, Hebrews tells us that God is in the process of making you and me holy. That is, he's renewing us day by day, changing us into the image of Jesus Christ. So he sees us as perfect. He sees the end product. But yet, the reality is he's renewing us day by day. He's changing us. He realizes that we're not perfect in our behavior, but we're perfect in his eyes. We've been cleansed. That's why Paul said we need to have a new attitude. And he said this in the book of Ephesians. He said, you were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Now, practically speaking, that means that when I look in the mirror in the morning, I refuse to accept the idea that I'm unacceptable. But rather, I choose to believe that I'm righteous and holy in God's sight. God's word is what dictates to me my value, not my feelings, not my past experiences, not what people think of me. I'm not righteous and holy because of what I've done. I'm righteous and holy because of what Jesus did for me. My righteousness comes because I live my life in Christ. So when you're able to see yourself in this way, you can transition from being merely wounded to becoming a wounded healer. And Henry Nouwen wrote a book about that, and just taking some excerpts from his book, he said this. He says, as followers of Jesus, we can also allow our wounds to bring healing to others. The main question is not how can we hide our wounds so we don't have to be embarrassed, but how can we put our woundedness in the service of others? When our wounds cease to be a source of shame and become a source of healing, we have become wounded healers. And I think that's what should be happening in our faith experience. That's what God wants to be doing in our life, making us wounded healers, not just people who spew out Bible verses and feel good because we did it and sounded righteous. Wounded healers are people who are able to bring goodness and beauty and kindness into the world. And that's who we want to be. You know, too often, faith is no more than learning a new vocabulary, new words, you know, that only add another layer to our lives and really cover over our woundedness. But that kind of faith is so hollow. Other people see that. Even we see it. We can feel it, how hollow it is. Our greatest witness to the world should be our changed life. That's what we want to show the world. And that means we own our trauma. We invite God into our trauma to heal us. And then authentically, we share how God healed us with other wounded people. So we may not find goodness and beauty and kindness in the world or our newsfeed. I have to keep telling myself that. But I believe we can be the source of goodness and beauty and kindness for the world if we let God do his work in us. Now, the whole issue of shame and trauma is a big issue. And I could probably, I know I have done workshops on it. I was going to say I could do a workshop on it. Well, I have. So I've taught a lot on it, and I put that all into a book, and I wrote the book a few years ago, and I've made it available for free, and there it is. So if you are Kindle owners, it's available free between today and Thursday, and you can download it. If you don't have a Kindle but you have a phone, just go to the App Store and download a Kindle app for free. And then go to Amazon, download the book for free. You can be reading it before you leave here today. So I've been really pleased. It was that was the first book that I wrote, and it was kind of a lark that it got printed, and I was surprised that people actually were helped so much by it. So if you read the reviews, they're very positive. I'm thrilled that it's helped so many people, and if it helps you, that's great. It's free. If you want to share the link with other people, you know, go to Amazon, click the link, and share it with other people. It's free for them as well.